the mound. Urban's got it. Nobody's covering second base.
I saw this right. Did Jeff Francoeur get this and throw it straight in the ground? Got a little stumble here. That's the shortest throw you'll ever see. He just missed the cutoff, man.
Look at the phone. It's off the hook. Look at that slow. He's going to use the towel. This is a bad night.
Pitcher is warming it up.
When the uniforms turned powder blue, the edge dropped off, and the sweet smell of success turned sour.
The Fanatic, his hot dog shooting gun, that's 98 miles an hour of compressed meat headed right at your noggin.
Welcome to the Dirty Inning.
Hello.
I am Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Dr. Trevor Strunk.
Hey, don't expect Justin to follow you too long. If you're anything like me, he's going to unfollow you.
Trev is, of course, upset with me because I believe the term is soft blocked him.
Yeah,
Twitter.
I was soft blocked by Justin, who not only is the person who I do this podcast with, but also one of the people I followed on here the longest and has followed me the longest since I was first on. Just soft blocked me because I was giving him the business about Lenny Dykes for following him.
Well, I wanted to ask on the scale of Twitter etiquette, how bad is a soft block? Because I'm not aware.
A soft block is considered pretty nice because it's I think like in terms of unfollowing someone, right? The thing you should do, most people would agree, is you soft block them so that you know they're not still following you and feeling like an idiot, right? You say like, I don't want anything to do with this person anymore. And like, I don't, you know, what would be nice is that they find out when it happens. So we're both not going to have anything to do with each other. I typically just unfollow. I don't find that very compelling, but a lot of people think that way. And so like in general, it's considered a fairly polite thing to do. Now, should you do that to someone who, has met you many times in person, has
threaten me. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's not a threat.
Oh, no, I'm looking forward to this because I want to explain to the people why this happened, which is because...
The way you're assuming me talking about reasons that we are friends is a threat. You're so hurt. What happened to you?
Well, what happened to me was I was in the middle of another manic, busy afternoon, as we all are every day, and I got an alert from my longtime follower, Dr. Trevor Strunk, in which he had tagged me with a Lenny Dykstra tweet saying, come get your boy, in regards to me coming, as though Lenny Dykstra is my boy. Not only did Lenny Dykstra like that, he then followed me. I screen-capped the follow, sent it to Trev, and said, why have you done this? He responded, and I quote, ha 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 ha, oh my god. Then tweeted out his own screen-cap of me asking why he had done this. And at this point, I said, I am too busy. I cannot be drawn into whatever Lenny Dykstra smoke and mirrors tomfoolery. He's cocking up this afternoon.
Wow.
And I'm just simply not going to be a part of this. And thus the soft block, which I had not realized would be such a slap in the face.
You realize you could just mute me.
Mm-hmm.
You could mute anyone.
That's fair.
You could mute Chris Jones if you wanted to.
That's true. You can do that anytime. And I have.
Oh, boy.
I love all you guys. But sometimes I want to seal shut the door that allows you into my life.
No, that's fair. You are kind of a person like that. You like your privacy. Now, I would say that if we lived closer to each other, we would be fast friends and hanging out off the internet. This is what I believe to be true. That given the few times we've been able to have some beers together and stuff, it's always been a nice time. But I get it in that, like, really all that I am is a series of buzzes and alerts on your phone that say things like, hey, Justin, I've set you up for another funny, personal experience.
Hey, Justin, I've really just introduced Lenny Dykstra into your life, unless you take action.
Did you follow back?
Hell no.
Lenny Dykstra?
I blocked him too. I waited a few minutes just in case he would notice that I had blocked, and I blocked him too. I don't want no part of that. Oh my God. That
he's
maelstrom
a
of sleaze and perversion. I don't need that in my life.
I think also he was tweeting something about there not being like a COVID vaccine or
sure.
how good Donald Trump is or something. I don't know.
Well, let's exercise some of that as you were describing it, this long-standing chemistry between the two of us. And tell
people talk about it all the time. I just got a DM saying that we have great chemistry.
And we can use that to tell yet another Phillies yarn, because this is, of course, The Dirty Inning, the podcast for people who quite often put on the wrong podcast. It is the podcast in which we discuss.
Wait, this isn't Reply All.
We discuss the dumbest, funniest, most obscure innings in Phillies history. And Trev, tonight's topic, I think, is pretty relevant, given that what's been funny the past few weeks is I've something has happened in baseball. Sometimes related to the Phillies, sometimes just in baseball, and I'm just like, oh, that's a good idea. I should try to find an episode based on that. And then, you know, that just happens to not be a week where we're doing an episode, so a full week goes by, and suddenly it doesn't seem as relevant anymore.
You're saying is you want to do weekly episodes.
You heard it here, folks. Time for mini dirties every morning from 7-minute segments to start your day.
It devolves very quickly into both of us being like, oh, we're here again. Jesus Christ.
Me and Trev chortling while reading headlines from decades ago on topics of no interest.
So the Watergate probe is in its second month. All right, I guess.
I don't know, is that funny? I don't know.
Maybe. Is that what you people want?
Looks like a wheelbarrow full of people with yellow fever were dumped into the Schuylkill River. I don't know. That just bums me out.
Tickle your funny bone, you animals.
But I feel like this topic is going to be a topic all season long in 2021. And I don't know how much you've been paying attention, Trev.
Unfortunately, I've been paying a lot of attention to the Phillies this year.
Yeah, it is unfortunate.
It sucks. It's a terrible feeling.
To put it nicely, you know, the Phillies, they haven't had a lot of lucky breaks the past few years. This year, it feels like they've gotten some lucky breaks. They've been around while other teams have been getting lucky breaks. They've been present where luck has occurred, whether that was good or bad for them. And a lot of that comes down to what the umpire calls. And to put it nicely, the umpires, they're looking real raw in 2021.
Boy, they suck. Like, it's basically like if you told the umpires, hey, we're getting closer. If you thought when we told the umpires we're getting closer to robot umpires, they said something. And I'm not even a robot umpire guy. Like, I see problems with that, too, as the now, I guess, suspended DJ Mosfet, Sean, our friend and husband of one of our compatriots, Sean. Has pointed out there's like lots of problems with the old robot empire. It's not a quick fix, but you know, like that aside, you would think if you told a bunch of guys whose job it was to like stand at a baseball game, watch it all up close, and just every so often be like safe. if you told them your job's about to be stolen by robots, that they'd probably like up their game. You're wrong. if anything, they have become defiant in their terribleness.
And this is the problem, is that once again, there is not even a hint of accountability on the table for no reason. And in a fun twist, a lot of these raw moments have come against the Phillies in good and bad ways. As I said, you know, I'm sure everyone remembers Alec Bohm's foot missing the plate against the Braves.
Extremely funny.
When in the Phillies' favor, very funny. Andrew McCutchen being called out for running out of a base path he never once veered out of. Less funny. Rhys Hoskins' game-tying home run being called a double. Something of a mystery. Hunter Wendelstadt calling pitches 3 inches off the plate a strike. Bad, but again, that was also a game where the Phillies won by 10. So, fine.
Very funny, actually. It's good.
But at the same time, this is when it happens to you in a good way, it's just going to happen to you again at another point in a bad way. And it's just an ongoing, frustrating experience, and it feels like the umpires are off to a really bad start. And once again, we just have this bizarre concept dropped in our laps that we got to talk about, which is the umpires are just, Major League umpires, are just these self-important, bizarrely secretive coven of professionals who oversee a novelty, but are for some reason utterly protected from any kind of accountability. There's no system where when they screw up, they got to go down to the minors and then come back. Even though we have replay, they still, you know, the umpire who's in the replay in New York might just not want his umpires on the field to feel bad, so he sides with them anyway. It makes the whole system useless.
It's not even like, you know, like people will point out that they have a good union, and they do. Like the umpires union is very strong, and I'm sure that has part like actually not just part, but a lot of like what, you know, a lot of this comes down to the umpires union is very strong. You can't just fire a bunch of umpires, and that's, you know, I'm not going to say that's a bad thing. You know, like great, don't lose your jobs, but it goes beyond that. It's more like the kind of like pork barrel like boss Taft-y politics where like it's not just like a good union. It's like. It's like some guy standing by while you like knock over a truck, and they're like, "Hey, don't forget to take your 15 minutes."
I didn't see nothing. Yeah,
it's like they're like just take a steel bat to Ronald Acuna, and be like, "That's for showing me up."
Cartoonish in its buffoonery, and I'm glad you're characterizing it in this way because this is exactly the kind of thing we're going to talk about tonight.
Oh, good.
And I feel like in telling this story, by the end of it, I think I kind of realized this might be the story that explains why the umpires are a secretive coven that you never really find out what's going on behind closed doors. And I do want to say that I've met and interviewed umpires at lower levels than the major leagues who know what they're doing and are trying to, in this day and age, learn how to be umpires for the modern game and are learning how to, like, interact with angry coaches, terrible parents, and like, how to deal with conflict on the field and just how to be an umpire, like, how to position yourself, where to be. And, like, they are doing good work because there's an umpire shortage because nobody wants to do it because of, you know, what they go through at the lower levels. And then also because you have certain umpires, again, not all of them, at the major league level, who we all know their names, and we all know who we're talking about when we say the umpires are terrible. Yeah,
there's like five or six easy.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's more than like three. Like the same three names get floated around, but there's, you know, there's more umpires because there's guys who could be good and are bad. There's guys who are just bad. Like, you know, it does vary from place to place. But
I think the funniest thing about bad umpires is, and then I'll let you get to it. But I think the funniest thing about bad umpires is that the guy who should be like the you know, the poster child for like, this guy screwed it up, he ruined like a wonderful moment in baseball, like I hate him so much, is I can't even remember his name actually, which should give you an idea that I it's popped out of my head. But he's not like a world historically bad umpire, but he's the guy who absolutely botched that last Andrés Galarraga.
Armando Galarraga.
Andres is the hitter.
His name is Jim Joyce.
Okay, yeah. I keep wanting to say Jim Jones, and I'm like, that's not right.
Nope.
very controversial. Not an umpire. Jim Joyce, like, you know, he should absolutely be the poster child for, like, you know, oh, get rid of these bums, like, whatever. Like, look, he robbed this guy of his thing. And, like, just because Jim Joyce was like, I am so sorry, I messed up the call, like, I don't, this sucks, like, I'm sorry, I screwed it up, like, even that is seen as some sort of like Sully Sullenberger kind of heroism in terms of umpires, because it's so rare.
It's a human moment, which is, you're exactly right. And I feel like I'm saying this off the top of my head, I'm not sure, like, I can't quote a source on it, but I feel like, like the next year in the player umpire polls, Jim Joyce was like voted number one, like best umpire. And not just because of the apology, because like he was just an umpire that they were like, oh yeah, he's good.
Yeah. And he said, sorry about, like, oh, I recognize that you guys are people as well. Like, instead of Joe West, who's like, you guys buying my country album yet?
Well, in a lot of ways, the 1993 season in Philadelphia, Trev, feels isolated. It comes in the middle of a season where the Phillies finished, well, between seasons in which the Phillies finished in last place in 1992, and then two seasons that followed it were shortened by work stoppage. It is a postseason oasis in Phillies history, in a desert of very normal disappointment. It's got its own subplots, tons of characters, a lively setting, and a perfectly...
If only someone had made a podcast about it.
It has a perfectly heartbreaking conclusion as well. But even if you didn't live it, then you don't really know about the 1993 season in the context of those Phillies in the era. You don't really hear or know about threads from other seasons connecting to it. At least typically I don't. It kind of lives on its own because it wasn't an era of Phillies success. It was a year in which, you know, some good players looked great. Lightning was caught in a bottle and a city absolutely fell in love with its team.
Yeah, so, absolutely. It's 2001 Sixers-esque. But it's not, though, because that team was good after the fact. Like, it has all the personality of the best this Phillies team is so fun, like the 70s Flyers and all those, but like it without any more of the success. So it's sort of like it is, you're absolutely right. It's like oh yeah, they had their one moment and then they made one album. And then they broke up.
Well, all we cared about in 1993 was the next game. There wasn't a lot of dwelling on where we are in Philly's history or particular players' development. It was just this group of dudes who all became best friends and won the pennant together. And that being said, I found one. I found a thread that connected 1993 to another season. It is, of course, in regards to umpires. It was a perfect early summer day for baseball in Cincinnati, mostly sunny, high in the mid-70s. The kind of
birds
day
chirping.
The kind of day where you can take a deep breath and not be overpowered by the smell of roadkill sizzling on the city streets. Mm. A perfect occasion for Monday night baseball on ESPN. Phillies were 34-15, the Reds hovering around 500. A quality matchup for the national audience that was likely astounded to see a Phillies team in first place at the end of May. America's living rooms, dens, and bars must have been full of silent, confused viewers, their foreheads wrinkled with concern at this anomaly and the impact on human history it would undoubtedly have. Well, the Phillies
lost. Why
are
the Reds playing the Red Sox, they said. No, no, it's a different Red team. Why are the Reds playing the Reds, they said. No, that's the same team.
Kind of a slow bunch out there.
Who can blame them, though? It had been so long.
The Phillies lost that game 6-4, calming a worried nation. But no worries, the Phillies would take 2 of 3 from the Reds during the series. But the story of the game wasn't the Phillies losing it. The story was Balkan Bob Davidson.
Ah, oh, Balkan Bob!
Which is exactly what Bob Davidson wanted. Umpires think of themselves as cops. Which is my point. Like, this is a well-worn parallel. I think more that they're like theater kids who were too ashamed of their instinct in high school to entertain that they refused to engage it. So being an umpire lets them do that, but they can pretend, no, I'm just like a baseball sheriff, a big tough guy. They're cosplaying.
I'm the thin blue line. Like, I'm all that stands between you and Trey Turner doing a dance.
Right, like, I don't want this, but gosh, I guess I have to. Anyway, what Balkan Bob did, what Balkan Bob does. I mean, if you call something so much... if you make a certain call so much more than other umpires, that it becomes your nickname.
Wait, what's the call, Justin?
That shouldn't be greeted with endearment. It should result in an audit of your abilities and a decision that you don't know what a balk is and need to go back to the minors to learn how to do your job better. But anyway, Bob inserted himself into the narrative of this game in 1993 and is probably the reason the Phillies lost by calling a balk on Larry Anderson in the 8th inning while the Phillies were ahead. 4-2.
I'm sure Larry took that well.
The balk loaded the bases and kicked off a 3-run rally that, to be fair, would also not have happened if Anderson and his replacement David West had located their pitches. Nevertheless, Darren Dalton had some thoughts to share after he'd been ejected along with Jim Fregosi and earlier in the game pitching coach Johnny Padres.
His first thought, Larry was drunk, okay?
What do you want from us? Larry was drunk. I'm kind of drunk. It's the 1993 Phillies. What do you want?
We're all drinking.
So what Dutch said to the papers was, Bob is one of those impact umpires. It was an ESPN game, and he couldn't wait to suit up. He was going to make an impact on the game one way or another. He had thrown his mask after the balk call and been ejected. And then Fregosi had also been ejected. And Dalton said, to blatantly make calls because you're mad at somebody, that's way out of line. That should never happen. And he's referring to Phillies starter Curt Schilling even saying during that game that while he'd been batting, Bob Davidson had straight up told him that he was getting squeezed because Dalton had been complaining about the pitches on his behalf. Davidson, as umpires always do when hit with the slightest critique, fell all over himself, claiming that he would never do that, that he'd never done that, that he never would do that, and that he was disappointed Schilling would even suggest something like that. So Balk and Bob was the story. But this brought to mind for people another issue from 3 years prior. Another incident had occurred between the Phillies and the umpires, sparking something of a war between the two groups that had only recently simmered down. But now, as the AP recapped this argument between the Phillies and Bob Davidson in the paper, they said the ceasefire appeared to potentially be over. So,
I know, so in this sense, 1994 riots in Philadelphia, the Phillies versus the umpires.
Where were you when the umpires ran through the streets? Their masks and protective vests and little clicker guys in their hands. The ominous sound of those switches clicking, counting balls and strikes as they smashed windows and threw flaming garbage cans.
People talk about Tommy Green as if he didn't just die in 1994, killed by an umpire.
So what happened those 3 years prior in 1990? What occurred between the Phillies and umpires that was so memorable? They were still dredging it up 3 years later as a reference, fresh enough in readers' minds that they'd immediately know what they were talking about.
Well, I'd like to know.
Well, Trev, let me tell you. Let me tell you the funniest, dumbest, most egregiously head-shaking, eye-closing, exasperated sigh-emitting sequence of events I've read about in a long time. If you think today's umpires are out of control, which they aren't, this story from the 1990 Phillies files covers a time when everything was a little sweatier in baseball, a little grubbier, a little grabbier, a little more stained with tobacco juice than it is today, a time when baseball is, you know, now a lot more corporate and sterile. So of course this story is about an umpire named Joe West.
Oh!
It's 1990, Trev. You and I are mewling children with stupid, undeveloped brains.
I'm five. I can do whatever I want.
I'm five. It's time for me to hit the road. Getting one of those little Tyco motor cars. And
yeah, one of those cars.
Slowly inch your way out of the development.
Hey, I'm making the way. Noise as I go.
Just decimated by a garbage truck driven by an umpire.
Wow.
Iraq! Iraq had just invaded and annexed Kuwait, sending chaos spiraling through the headlines.
Oh, I'm sure this won't ever affect anything.
Scientists have discovered how marijuana got into the brain while smoked, potentially leading to therapeutic remedies that could involve the drug being used without its intoxicating effects, according to a Boston Globe Wire story that was run in the Inquirer. Thank goodness, I said. The last thing anyone wants from marijuana is to be intoxicated.
Local nerds ruined drug.
Need to tell one of the owners of Jim's Steaks on South Street how marijuana gets into your brain, though, according to the Inquirer. Because at this point, the headline in the paper was, an owner of Jim's Steaks to stand trial on drug charges.
Uh-oh. Was it Jim?
It was William Proetto. He is 53, a principal owner of Jim's Steaks restaurants. He was ordered to stand trial in Montgomery County on charges stemming from two alleged cocaine buys by undercover detectives.
Oh, that's kind of a weak charge, just buying cocaine.
Hang on, a search of his home turned up 140 grams of suspected cocaine, 180 Valium tablets, 567 other tablets, a small amount of marijuana, a 38 caliber handgun, $2,450 in cash and drug paraphernalia, including computerized weight scales and packaging materials, according to testimony at the hearing. So there was potentially...
That's a decent amount.
Something going on. But yeah, I like it's just like 567 assorted tablets.
You know, some of those were Advil.
Hey, also going on at this time, remember how they always said Trump's biggest insecurity was people thinking he wasn't rich? Well, here he is being a large-brained business king in 1990 over in Jersey. The Casino Control Commission yesterday unanimously ordered the terms of Donald Trump's financial rescue made public, but the commission's acting chairwoman delayed their release until Trump's lawyers obtained a judge's order, temporarily sealing the records. A hearing will be held this morning in Morris County on the issue. The one document made public yesterday provided insights into Trump's deal to escape bankruptcy court proceedings, though it raised more questions than it answered. It shows that Trump will pay no interest to 55 banks on $1.08 billion of debt for 3 to 5 years, saving $85 million annually in interest payments.
Well, I mean, he's done at least. We'll never hear from him again.
That's why they call him the king. Because of his smart financial moves that are not at all.
1990, I'm like, well, I don't care for that Trump man, but thank goodness this is the end of him.
This is not at all the financial equivalent of taking a loud diarrhea dump in a room on a toilet with no walls surrounding it. You're just on a toilet in a room with a bunch of people. I don't think it's like that at all.
I think he's done for. People are going to see him for who he is.
Well, more importantly,
a patriot.
Culturally, at this time, Philadelphia was going through an evolution in one of its most treasured rites of passage. Trev, do you remember those magical summers down at the shore? Right after graduating high school, you and your pals would rent a house and live it up for one last summer at the beach, working shit jobs to make money for college and eating whatever you could scrape out of a pan.
Yeah, my friend Stifler's mom was really hot, too. The thing was... She visited the house, which was pretty cool for my one friend who then got to have sex with Stifler's mom. But
a lot of other stuff happened. What a crazy sequence! That feels like three movies worth of hilarity.
Yeah, well, I mean, I left out a lot of the stuff like there was the people tried to have oral sex, and guess what? That didn't work out as well as they had hoped.
And guess I bet you think that went according to plan. Well, guess what? And I said three movies. I think it's more like 12 at this point.
Yeah, the only line between them is Eugene Levy being like, "I'll take another extra $7 million, please."
I mean, hey, these are treasured times in any Philadelphia graduate's life. Spending off days on the beach, nights getting drunk with your buds. Who knows when you'd see them again? All while John Mellencamp hoarsely told the story of America in the background. Maybe sometimes a guy in his 50s would come by and say things like, "Would you like to buy some drugs?" Or maybe, "I am the part owner of Jim's Steaks and a complete maniac." It was a uniquely Philadelphian experience to linger in adolescence for one last season before the rigors of college life came sweeping through and you gave up greasy stovetops and unmade beds for the greasy floors and unmade beds of a college dormitory. Ah, to be young and, more importantly, disgusting again. That was the topic of an Inquirer feature story that appeared in their daily magazine section, or more specifically, the story was about how those days were coming to an end. As the culture shifted, prices of real estate skyrocketed, the idea of a couple of teens renting a house for $500, $600, $700 for the entire summer was becoming antiquated and stupid. So
no teens ever had fun ever again. What a shame.
They were talking about, like, this might be the last summer where, like, kids who graduate in Philadelphia go down to the beach, rent a house, spend the summer, you know, working and partying, and then go to college. And they were saying, like, that might be coming to an end. So I got asked, Trev, did you go to senior week after high school?
No, I didn't. I didn't really like the people I went to high school with, so I didn't.
That makes sense.
Like, yeah, I didn't. I wasn't a real, like, I liked a lot of them, but I wasn't kind of like a senior week guy. But I did, like, I definitely just, like, bummed around at home and, like, went to a bunch of diners and just hung out with my friends and, like, tried to, like, you know, like, hook up with girls and stuff. Like, that's, like, It's like basically all anyone does. After high school, that's like, I don't know what you would do if you didn't have a dumb job and like were just constantly looking to get laid and living somewhere that either was free or cheap.
I don't know how I talked my parents into letting me go down to senior week. I really don't. And I wound up sleeping on like four individual like kitchen chair, like dining room
Justin,
chairs.
Justin, that's a disgusting thing to call women.
That I just like assembled on the deck and just slept on those. And yeah, and then I remember some dude like came up there and started playing the guitar and just like his gentle strumming. Just I was like, ah, this might be the only time I go to sleep this week. this is very nice.
Those days, good memories.
Those days were over, Trev. The cheapest place you could get now, said the story, was a spot for $1,800, and the realtor telling them that said they wouldn't rent that space out to their dog. But I think the more important question here is, why does your dog want to move out so badly?
My dog keeps asking for an apartment, like they do.
Well, the girls in the story that they sent her on are renting a house that they said they had to break into because the girls who had rented it the previous year had lost the key and it was never replaced. So
now that's Philly excellence right there.
The screen was ripped from their entrance. The oven didn't work. The fridge was a mess. The toilet overflowed. There was a hole in the wall between the bedrooms. One bedroom door didn't close. And the only time they had a view of the water was when the bay overflowed. But the tradition was coming to an end. Possibly
this was the best days of our life.
Possibly this very summer. Because realtors didn't want to rent to teenagers. And teenagers couldn't afford to rent the places other realtors would make available to them.
Boy, after hearing that story, why didn't realtors want to rent to teenagers?
just a magical time to be alive. I used to play kickball with a bunch of teachers who were pretty much doing the same thing. In the summer, they were like,
were you old or were you a kid at this point?
I don't think I've ever been old just yet, but
okay, fine. But were you your age now?
This was a couple of years ago. And,
okay, but you weren't like six. You weren't like the way you phrased it, the way we were talking. It sounded like when you were like 10 or something. You were just playing kickball with a bunch of teachers.
It's just me, like, a child.
This summer, I'm gonna go out where I can have a beer or two. Don't you agree, Justin?
I was 6 years old. I told my mom, "What are the best leagues for beer in hand sports in my area?" And that is how I, a kindergartner, wound up on a team with a bunch of adult teachers, and it was just the most magical summer of my life. You know, that was my beach. That was my magical beach weekend after graduation.
Justin's magical weekend with a bunch of degenerate people who wished him ill, who had nothing but his worst interests at heart.
But it was funny because they told me similar stories, like, oh yeah, we go down to the beach and we work as housekeepers or whatever during the summer. Then, you know, we get a house and we hang out down there. But they were also like, you know, we also take turns being the one who gets to sleep off their hangover while the other ones are working. And I remember them telling me a story about like puking off a balcony seconds after the renters had driven away. It's just a magical time, Trev. The beach.
Ah, the beach.
I was gonna wait until you said the beach back.
No, I just wanted to think of something to say, and then, you know, the thing is, I didn't have anything else to say except the beach.
The thing is the beach, Trev.
I've heard life is there to say. And I have to agree. It's a beach. That's not a saying that makes any sense to me. I like the beach. I saw Spencer Hall of formerly of SB Nation. I don't know where Spencer writes now. But maybe still at SB Nation. I'm not sure. But he was saying something like you may not have the beach gene and that's okay. And I think the only beach I like a lot is like the Jersey Shore, because it's not so much a beach as it is like a bunch of really scummy stores that are connected to a beach that sometimes you could use if you so choose. It's kind of like a carnival or something like that. I like that. I like that it's just like a giant state fair. But I don't really like hanging out on the beach that much.
I think that's understandable. And if you were a teen in Philadelphia, you weren't going to do it again anymore anyway.
Yeah. Now I have to – the only place I can go now is Myanmar. It's the only place that they – I'm just trying to think of the worst place they could think of in the inky about this.
So with the magical beach summers coming to an end, Philadelphia rounded up all the cotton candy vendors and John Mellencamp, and, you know, they got everybody into one abandoned caramel corn factory, shuttered it, and just let them all, you know, let that era come to an end. But as the
Explode
Phillies...
It, boys!
All right, tear it down. Hit the button.
It's going to be the best summer ever.
Born in the U.S. Well, one summertime tradition in the Philly area was still going strong. You could hear Harry Callis's voice coming out of the radios on what I assume is an abandoned beach at this point. By the end of July 1990, the Phillies were coming to terms with the Ricky Jordan era. He just wasn't panning out, Trev. And as the Phillies rounded the corner into August, they were right around 500, a perfect 50-50 after an 11-10 win over the Cardinals.
That's a funny thing to call perfect.
I mean, yeah, it's perfectly balanced. It's exactly what you want, right? A 500 baseball team. What other kind of baseball team exists?
500? Oh, you want something different? You want 1,000? Oh, okay. Geez, Mr. Entitled. Philly is a blue-collar team, my friend. Like, we don't need this trash. Like, 500's good enough for my dad. It's good enough for me.
We like our jobs blue-collar and our sports teams lousy, and we don't like it any other way. Thanks. But by the time the Phillies were playing the Mets on August 9th, 1990, they had sunk to 500.
That's not good either.
They looked like the same underperforming, over-caffeinated Phillies we know and watch. It was a scrappy, feisty bunch of Phils who took the field that night on August 9th, Trev. Reflective of an era when frustrations turned to violence with relative ease. Thank goodness we're out of that era. Dwight Gooden was pitching for the Mets. And
oh, no.
He hit two Phillies players with pitches. Dickie Thon got one in the elbow in the second, and Tom Herr took a fastball to the shoulder that knocked him to the ground in the fifth.
At least he still had the potato chip business to fall back on in case that injury stuck.
I think he was screaming that as he fell to the ground. At least I still have my potato chip business! This, of course, meant having two of your hitters hit with the baseball. This, of course, meant the Phillies had to decide whether or not to throw the baseball back at Dwight Gooden, because this is a sport that makes sense and is very serious. Of course, these instances of her and Thon getting hit, they were traced back to the day before, when David Cone had thrown a brushback pitch at Von Hayes and Don Carmen had retaliated by throwing the ball at David Cone's head. Now, the New York Post's recap of August 9th says that, quote, the war started in the fifth of this game, but clearly it had started many innings ago in the game before. So when the Phillies' decision was made, I feel, pretty quickly, to throw a pitch at Dwight Gooden, and they did, with Pat Combs nailing him in the knee as he came up to lead off the next inning.
That's brutal.
You know, I don't think that was totally unexpected. In fact, I know it wasn't. Everybody knew this was going to happen. Gooden knew, and he dropped his bat and helmet and charged the mound. Combs knew, as he threw his glove to the ground and met Gooden halfway between the mound and the plate. Darren Dalton knew, as he chased Gooden towards the mound, wrestled him to the ground, and started punching him in the back of the head. Eventually, all 50 players were on the field in a fight that lasted 6 minutes. Several players paired off to try and successfully slap each other, including Dickie Thon and Ron Darling. Two Phillies had Tom O'Malley in a chokehold. Mackie Sasser was punching Dutch in the face. Daryl Strawberry had been in the locker room this whole time and kind of like, I think, just realized what was going on. Stepped out on the field and was like, holy shit. Ran out there to immediately join the center of it, but Von Hayes met him in a beautiful takedown tackle. The umpires were powerless, the Post wrote. This is untrue. In their own story, in the Post's own story, they bring us to why we are even discussing this evening on the Dirty Inning. Joe West was one of the umpires on this night. Now,
wonderful.
If you imagine the way Joe West's face must light up when he sees an opportunity to insert himself, imagine how he feels in a brawl like this. If there's a moment on the field West can be a part of, he'll be a part of it. And
do you think he was hoping that that he would get flipped like Pedro Martinez flipped the Yankees pitching coach that one time?
Funny you should mention that.
I'm always about on the verge of mentioning that, I should say.
When this brawl happened, Joe West seemed to realize not only would he be able to get attention, but he'd be able to physically fight some of the players, and it would just be part of the action. So while holding off Von Hayes with one arm, Joe West grabbed Phillies pitcher Dennis Cook and body slammed him to the ground. Again, the New York Post loved this, I assume because it happened to a Phillies player, saying that West had been instrumental in de-escalating the ordeal, which is
by
also
body slamming,
which is clearly untrue because it continued. And also, what player is going to stand up after being body slammed by an umpire and be like, "Well, that's over. I guess back to normal, everyone. That's about it. Ever dust yourself off and let's just."
Sorry, I'm Joe. Sorry, everyone.
Cook returned to his feet, and after a few more blows were struck and many ejections were issued, things simmered down enough for the Phillies to lose 5-4. When the brawl had started, they'd been up 3-1.
That's their natural environment.
But that moment of Joe West body slamming Dennis Cook, that would be one of two moments that many would point to as a drama play, the curtain coming up on a drama play that pitted the Phillies and umpires against each other for the remainder of the 1990 season.
Wow.
So,
I mean, this is like one thing to say just like off the top before you get into the other stuff, which is going to be more interesting than this. Not than what you just said, but what I'm going to say. What you just said is fascinating. I want the audience to know that I also am fascinated by it. But
soft block.
You are
soft blocked.
No. Gah! I think like the baseball brawl is very funny to me in a lot of ways, and for like a lot of the reasons that are depicted here. Someone on Twitter who is a pitcher, I don't know if like this is a story he wants told or not, so I won't say who it is, but said in a group DM with just like a baseball DM with like a bunch of people in it that in a match this year, a fight this year, everyone started fighting and he ran in from the dugout without his glasses on. So he couldn't see anyone. So he just kept telling everyone, "Hold me back, hold me back." Just like making it up. And I think what's funny about baseball fights is like, they're both terrifying because like the absolute chaos of them must just be like completely enervating when you're actually in the middle of it. Like if you're Don Zimmer getting like thrown around by Pedro Martinez, that's one thing. If you are like in the middle of a bunch of dudes, just like, you know, everyone is fighting, everyone is crowding around you because that's just what they do. Like that must be so scary because like who knows what's going to happen next? It's so unpredictable. And so like I like that within this unpredictability, Joe West just somehow introduced like more awful unpredictability. He's like,
that's all he wants. Like what other umpire would have done that? No other umpire.
Baseball fight? Like one of the craziest things you can do in sports? Okay, cool. I'm going to be in the middle of it because I'm the star.
So let's take a break here because this is only the beginning of an ongoing ordeal that continued through basically the rest of the 1990 season that puts Joe West at exactly where he wants to be, in the headlines of your local newspaper. And we'll talk about that right after this. Well, Trev, we just talked about how Joe West on August 9th, 1990, body slammed Phillies pitcher Dennis Cook in the middle of a brawl between the Phillies and Mets. Let's jump ahead a few weeks past that August 9th brawl.
Okay.
It's August 23rd, and the Phillies are playing the Dodgers in L.A. Now, I mentioned that the Dennis Cook body slam was one of two moments brought up from this month of August in 1990 that's going to be pivotal later in our story. During this game on August 23rd, Von Hayes reaches first base on a fielder's choice and is talking to his first base coach, John Vukovich. And while doing so, he complains that Harry Wendelstadt, the home plate umpire, had called a pitch a strike that had not been a strike. Joe West overhears this, ejects Von Hayes. Ejects him for making a comment about a different umpire to his coach, not to any umpire, not complaining to anything, just having a conversation with his first base coach.
Okay, all right.
Now, it should be mentioned here as well, the night before that Phillies-Mets brawl on August 9th, Hayes had walked, removed his shin guard, tossed it to a bat boy, and Joe West had fined him $100 for equipment abuse.
What?
Hmm. So by this point, after the shin guard, the body slam, and now this shit, where he ejects a guy for overhearing him complain, the Phillies have had enough. Manager Nick Leyva and GM Lee Thomas go off on the umpires. What I said was what everybody in baseball feels. They just don't say it out loud, Leyva said. He's unprofessional. 99% of them are professional. He's the exception. I didn't say anything bad. I told the truth. I don't appreciate his attitude. It's a shame because he could be a good umpire. He knows how to ump. He knows what he's doing. But he's got this macho thing. He's got to show everybody that he's the boss. Arrogance. That's the word for it. Lee Thomas was unconcerned about Phillips' complaint to the league. This was in regards to head of the umpires union, Ricky Phillips, who we're going to hear in a second, complained to the league about the Phillies' comments. Lee Thomas said, tell him to come down to the park and talk to us. I'll talk to him. I'll gladly talk to him. Leyva said he had no regrets over saying what he did about West, and Thomas said Leyva was 100% justified in making the comments he did. So in response to this, of course, MLB umpires, with their delicate little feelings made of cheap glass, responded by immediately calling the league office and sobbing into the phone because someone clearly being targeted by an umpire was bothered enough to say it out loud.
My fifis are hurt, Joe West.
Richie Phillips, head of the umpires union Thursday, lodged a formal complaint with National League President Bill White, calling the Philadelphia Phillies' criticism of umpire Joe West a, quote, savage attack. This is about a man who body slammed a person during a baseball game.
I like my favorite thing about this is it's just exactly the Mr. Show sketch. My favorite Mr. Show sketch where David Cross plays someone who is a security guard. Plays a security guard who gets like attacked by these two bumbling criminals. And his attacks to stop them are sobbing and playing the nap card, falling asleep in the middle of the attack. Joe West essentially is just all the umpires are just doing this, right? Like they play the nap card. Like the Phillies have to respond.
Phillips asked Bill White to issue swift and severe punishment to general manager Lee Thomas and manager Nick Leyva for their comments to reporters after the Phillies 3-2 loss to the Dodgers on Wednesday night. I can tell you as soon as I heard the remarks, I contacted Bill White's office, Phillips said in a telephone interview. It is outrageous that the Phillies use the umpires as a scapegoat. First of all, a scapegoat for what?
For losing 3-2?
They're just complaining about the things the umpires did. What are they using him as a scapegoat for?
No one's going to believe you if you use us as a scapegoat for losing 3-2. No one's ever going to believe that the umpires were in the wrong. What fan would?
Leyva's original comments had been about how it seemed like Joe West was targeting the Phillies and seemed to not like the Phillies, which given those things I mentioned, the shin guard thing, the conversation thing, it's like, how do you not think that has a thing against the Phillies?
Yeah.
Phillips said, it is absolutely ludicrous that Joe West or any other umpire in any way or fashion has a vendetta for the Phillies. To say that is to say that umpires have no integrity. I would say that Joe West has no integrity. I would say that, what does he need integrity for? He doesn't have any accountability. What do you need integrity for at that point? So a few days later, Joe West gets a call from the league. And when reporters asked what had happened on August 29th, he told them that umpires would no longer be tasked with breaking up brawls should they occur on a big league ball field.
That just seems normal.
If they want to fight, let them kill each other, Joe said, in a needlessly dramatic quote intended to make himself sound like a cop on a movie poster, but in doing so, he definitely sounds more like the bad guy in one of those movies who winds up getting impaled on a forklift or dropped into a vat of acid at the climax. Here's another version of that quote I found.
Nice to meet you.
There's a fuller version of the quote I found in Joe Strauss's column, Inside Baseball, later in the season. Baseball wars of today will be settled by the players on the field. Umpires aren't going to break them up anymore, West said. If players want to get out of control, they can call the National Guard.
What?
However, Joe seemed to have got this wrong, as Joe historically does. The next day, the AP reported that Bill White, the NL president, said that he had not told Joe West that umpires were not to intervene in brawls. He had told them that Joe West was not to intervene in brawls. He is no longer to physically touch a player, White said, because West had been involved in, quote, a number of on-field incidents with players.
Fantastic.
This is the written statement White released via a spokesperson. In my meeting with Joe West Thursday, I told him that since he has been involved in a number of on-field incidents with players, he is no longer to physically touch a player. All other umpires are to continue acting as they have in the past. Now, first of all, Joe West contested that this was the nature of the call, and there was something of a debate as to like whether Bill White had lied or Joe West was lying, but at the end of the day, this was the situation. The umpires' union called this, quote, an unprecedented lack of support for umpires, which... why would the umpires need more support to body slam players? What reason exists for that support? They claimed they were urging the commissioner to stop players from brawling at all, which they absolutely had to know would never happen. And they also said that White's clarification contradicted what he'd said in his meeting with West. Phillips, the head of the umpires union, said, "The whole thing is stupid. It reeks of cowardice," saying he suspected that the Phillies had pressured White into the statement. Yes, those deeply influential Phillies swaying the National League president like they always do.
I mean, it's just like, you know, you talk about the big movers in baseball, and it's always just like, oh, well, so you're saying that now. What did the Phillies pay you?
What are the Phillies paying you to say
it's
that?
It's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. Like, you know, we all know their influential standards.
White had been convinced by Phillips that umpires had been throwing out of players out of games for the thing that happened in L.A. where Von Hayes was overheard complaining about an umpire. So he was successfully convinced, Bill White was, by the umpires that this was a very normal thing. Who the hell knows if that's true, but Bill White believed them. So he was willing to grant them that, but it was more just like, I don't know. I read this as him being like, save us more headaches and just don't get involved with this stuff.
Can but you of course, call Joe off West. Your bizarre friend Joe West. Like, please, I just don't want to. I don't want to deal with him anymore. He's so irritating.
So of course,
saying my friend Joe West is not the nicest man you've ever met.
That's what it is. That's what's crazy about this. That like it's the slightest critique, the suggestion, the thinking that perhaps some one thing was their fault. That thing being grabbing a player and body slamming him into the turf. That anything like that, any slight against the umpires, needs to be met with the swiftest and strongest action against anyone who's saying anything negative about umpires publicly.
Well, that's why, like, that's why I say, like, it's not just that they have. I mean, they do have a great union, and again, like, good for them. But like, it's not just that. It's that like it is like it's like a criminal conspiracy where you're just like the instant anyone says anything, you have to be like, how dare you? I will. Find your family. I will tell them what a horrible person you are. Maybe I'll hurt them. I don't know. Things could get out of hand. I'm an umpire. Who knows what's going to happen, right? I'm an animal. And you have to apologize or else your family's going to like wake up in the night to Nicky the Iceman, AKA like Angel Hernandez.
So at this point, the commissioner of baseball is Faye Vinson. He was being called to get involved, and which side he would support was speculated all throughout the sport. Phillips, of course, brought the integrity of the game into question because, you know, nobody had done that yet, even though, again, it was an umpire who body slammed a player to the ground. I cannot get past this.
Yeah, I mean, look, like... I mean, that's the other thing, right? Well, like, umpires will always talk about the integrity of the game, but then never actually, I know this is cliche, but, like, they never entertain the idea that they are infecting the integrity of the game. So it's just, it's so strange. Like, what a weird group of people.
The problem umpires, who are the ones we've heard of, the ones we're always talking about, the 5-6 of them that are just not good at doing what they do for a variety of reasons, you know, they don't care about the integrity of baseball. That is not. No. I would never, ever think that was the case. And at this point, the Major League Umpires Association says that we will continue to support Joe West, will not tolerate any umpire receiving disparate treatment from a league president. This was part of their problem. They didn't like that Joe West got singled out. I don't know why. They were very upset about this.
Joe West had been giving them all his country album, and they thought it was a banger.
So here's a good spot as any to go on a bit of a tangent. This is where I want to point out that umpires feared for their lives when Manny Machado made contact with an umpire during an argument over balls and strikes in June
2019. Oh, I forgot about that. That was so funny.
And he was suspended one game, and the umpires union went off on their Facebook page saying, "It is not okay to throw a temper tantrum," and I'm gonna read this very slowly. "It is not okay to throw a temper tantrum and physically touch someone of authority just because you don't agree. Violence in all workplaces is not tolerated, period. Offenders are made examples of by being dealt with severely, not just for the good of all the employees, but for the good of the company itself. A person is given and granted a level of protection from abusive behavior in any workplace." The umpires said this. And if you'll remember...
just like incredible self-awareness here.
And if you'll remember, umpire Rob Drake tweeted during the impeachment of Donald Trump that he planned to buy an AR-15 rifle, quote, because, quote, "If you impeach my president this way, you will have another civil war. MAGA 2020.
Wow, I didn't see that part. That's funny.
In response to Rob Drake's threat to shred people with an assault rifle if a presidential impeachment didn't go his way, the umpires union said, "Rob is a passionate individual and an outstanding umpire. He chose the wrong way to convey his opinion about our great country. His posting does not represent the view of the MLBUA or reflect those of the umpires we represent. The MLBUA supports all of the umpires who ensure fair play in the greatest game on earth. We are a group of individuals with diverse opinions and beliefs, and America, and justice, and pastimes, and fields of wheat and grains, and Purple Mountains majesty." So I bring that up because the umpires union approach, their approach to violence in general, seems to be pretty fluid, depending on the era.
Kind of hands off in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it sounds like it depends on the era and whether or not the person committing the violence is an umpire.
I would say it doesn't even depend on the era at all. I would say it only depends on whether or not the person suffering the violence is an umpire.
Yeah, that's fair. Because I'm going to go back to this. I would say Joe West has no integrity because he has no accountability. What do you need integrity for if nobody's going to punish you for not having integrity? Joe West cares about two things: authority and attention.
And Joe West...
if you believe for a second he just wants to get the call right, allow me to point you toward an incident on May 9th, 1984, when Joe West appeared to miss a call at the plate in which he said a Braves runner was safe when replay seemed to indicate he was not. The Mets got a look at the replay and complained to him. In response, Joe West ejected the cameraman who had shown the Mets the replay.
That's really good.
I mean... what are we doing, guys? Like, what are we doing?
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Just like the utter abuse of power. Very funny. I don't like Joe West or anything, and this doesn't make me like him more, but I gotta say, incredible follow through.
I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? Because I'm never gonna say I like Joe West, but at the end of the day, this shit is just funny because, again, it's baseball. It's funny because it's like watching like two gerbils fight. You're watching two gerbils fight and it's like, look at those gerbils fight. That's funny. But to the gerbils, it might be the most important day of their lives.
Yeah.
Like it might be the most intense. And that's like watching umpires work in this fashion where they are just so overseer. Like you oversee a game. There's so many umpires, we don't know their names because they're the ones who like, you know, umpire audit or whatever tweets about and like they got all their calls right that night. Like that, those guys, they're not the problem. It's the Joe Wests who are so funny to watch because they take themselves so seriously, and what they do just shouldn't be very serious.
Yes,
and exactly. And the problem is that as a umpire and as an authority figure, Joe West is a complete joke. But as a character in the story of baseball,
oh, wonderful! I mean,
massively entertaining.
Has to be there. I mean, like any sort of like. If you're going to make a Hall of Fame, not Hall of like very good or whatever argument, like if you're going to go ahead and do that, you have to put Joe West in the Hall at that point. Yeah, I mean, like he's hilarious in a lot of ways and like an awful person. And I wish he wasn't an umpire, but like if you're gonna say like, yeah, okay, they're part of the whole patina of the game, I think you're never getting away from Joe West then.
So I kept thinking while researching this. Why, if a brawl broke out during a game, What was so problematic for Joe West to just go take a dump and read the newspaper? Like, they were asking him to do less for the same right. amount of money. I refuse to believe that that concept had zero appeal to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has a lot of appeal to me.
He had literally just said in the paper, if they want to kill each other, let them. But no, being singled out meant he was being scrutinized. He was being held accountable, and he just couldn't handle that. So the confusion over Bill White's statements to West has now gotten to the point that it's an issue for the commissioner of baseball, Faye Vincent, to get involved. And in anticipation of this, on August 31st, per Gannett News Services, the Phillips and the Umpires Union had drawn up a to-do list for Faye Vincent.
Oh, God.
Here that is. We're asking the commissioner to do three things. First of all, we want Joe West's status reinstated to the same as other umpires. Joe West is like a leper on the field right now. We want it mandated that his authority is the same as all umpires regarding brawls.
Everyone must kiss Joe West.
Everyone must kiss and hug Joe West when they get out on the field. Secondly, we want it made clear that Joe West acted properly in the Von Hayes situation.
Very funny.
And thirdly, Phillips' final demand from Vincent, where we've asked the commissioner to enact an automatic suspension rule for player brawls. If you're going out there throwing fists, you'll be automatically suspended. And the people who come off the bench will also be suspended. I mean, if you want to stop brawls from happening, that's a great idea.
You know, good luck.
Yeah, like that. Exactly. We still have
everyone
brawls.
Everyone on the entire team is suspended. Oh, what are we going to do now? Like, we can't play the game because all, like, 25 members are suspended for the next few days. Like, I guess we'll just tell the ad people that they can't have their revenue. Like,
I mean, again, if players get upset
bonkers.
And they run out on the field and it's, like, past the point where the umpire is going to point at both dugouts and warn everybody, then, yeah, all you four guys can just go have a cigarette. Just go lean on the bars. The players are going to police themselves and pull each other apart. The whole thing's going to last, you know, at most 6 minutes. Like, that was listed in this brawl because it was a particularly intense one that went on for, you know, a longish amount of time.
6 minutes is a massive amount of time for a baseball brawl.
But, like, as an amount of time, 6 minutes isn't that much. If you guys are being asked to just not be a part of it, or even just one of you is being asked to not be a part of it. I don't know. I just don't see that as big of an issue. Like, you guys can just, instead of being like, no, our goal is to stop brawls entirely. If that's true, that'd be great. I don't believe that that's true.
Well, the only reason
just
they
let
said
them
that...
fight each other and just go away for a couple minutes and come back. It's not your responsibility. The league is saying it's not your responsibility. I mean, they're not. They're saying it's not Joe West's responsibility.
Correct, yeah. But, like, the only reason they said that, right, is because, like, if you say we want all brawls to go away, then Joe West was acting properly because he basically, as you said before, he was a cop. He was the thin blue line. Like, he was able to, like, get in the way of, like, of more people getting hurt by making a tough choice.
I would say there's a difference between pulling guys off other guys or keeping guys from going into the fray and body slamming a player into the dirt.
I would say that act could
potentially hurt a player.
No, I agree with you. What I'm saying is if they indeed want to say, like, our main concern here is not like, you know, they've clearly said, like, our main concern is making sure poor Joe West doesn't go home and like cry. Like, if they're saying our main concern, our central concern is fighting, then you can make the argument that Joe West actually, not just acting properly, did something very brave. Did something that was hard and took guts. And you know, he knew he wouldn't earn him any favors. But that's what a hero does.
I'm glad you said that, because that is how some people felt. And I bet you're thinking at this point, Joe West, who is still umpiring, of course, as all this is going on in this sequence of events, of course, you know, he took a step back and kept his head down. Well, of course he didn't. This is exactly what he wanted. Authority, attention regarding his authority. One AP story on September 3rd praised Joe West for his handling of a dicey situation in a Reds-Cubs game.
Never a good idea to praise him. The headline that he's there.
The headline says West heads off potential brawl in Reds game. It tells the story of how umpire Joe West, ordered by National League President Bill White not to get involved in any fights yesterday, blocked the path of Eric Davis when the Cincinnati outfielder tried to approach Chicago Cubs' Greg Maddux after being hit by one of Maddux's pitches. In the fourth inning, Maddux hit Davis with a fastball that the right-hander later said had gotten away from him. Davis took a couple of steps toward the mound before his path was blocked by West and Cubs catcher Joe Girardi. Hey, Joe, making any double switches in this game? I'm not supposed to comment on this at all, West said.
I thought you were saying that about double switches. I was like, did Liz tell you not to comment on double switches?
Enough about double switches. Shut up. Joe West, who was told, oh, don't get involved in any fights, can't help himself, gets in the way of Eric Davis because, oh gosh, he's just a natural peacekeeper, that Joe West. You know, he just can't help himself.
Can't help, if he sees injustice, it's like, you know, the end of the Grapes of Wrath where JC himself, not Jesus Christ, but I forget what his name is, like John Crow or something. It's Jesus, but it's not really. Says, you know, whenever there's injustice, I'll be there. Whenever there's
I think that's
a man
Batman
sleeping rough, I'll be there. Wherever anyone is feeling down and sad and a mother needs a home, I'll be there. That's Joe West. Joe West is actually that character. Joe West was who John Steinbeck was thinking about when he wrote those lines.
And I love the quote where he says, I'm not supposed to comment on this at all, but he, of course, has a comment. It says, Major League Baseball has told umpires not to stop players from fighting. That comes from Richie Phillips, head of the umpires union. But we're supposed to just let them fight. But I don't want to see a fight any more than anyone else. It was just instinct.
He was coming right at me.
You disingenuous. Come on, man.
It's oh, it was so
just
bad.
Instinct to stop the conflict. Meanwhile, everybody. An interesting twist in this, by the way. Again, brought to us by Joe Strauss in his column Inside Baseball. The umpires union contract was set to expire after the 1990 season. Strauss suggested this latest kerfuffle could play a role in negotiations.
Would be so great. Joe West loses his good gig because he just can't stop, like, breaking up brawls.
We'll hear about how that wound up at the end of the episode. But for now, meanwhile, everybody's waiting and preparing for what side Faye Vinson is going to land on. The umpires, who are worried about an unprecedented lack of support. The Phillies, who feel personally victimized by Joe West's horse shit. Bill White, the NL president, who seems to be leaning toward the Phillies, but really seems to technically be somewhere in the middle. Well, it's about time for somebody else to weigh in, and that somebody else was Lee McPhail, former president of the American League, who felt Vincent should have supported White by now, saying it should have never gone on this long. And
is he related to Andy?
I don't know. I knew you were going to ask me that, and I didn't look it up.
How dare you?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
I knew you were, and I wanted to disappoint you.
And he said that it should never have gone on this long, that White had complete and utter authority on this issue, and it should never have been questioned, which is interesting that it's the umpires, and particularly Joe West, who are so impassioned about their own authority never being questioned, and in this case, had no problem questioning the authority of the person above them, to the point that they went around him to the commissioner to get the answer they actually wanted.
Well, I'm sorry, Justin. You think they have a boss? Their boss is Lady Justice.
My boss. You want my boss? Points to the statue outside the courthouse. That's my boss.
It's just like the fanatic.
Blindfolded, yeah.
Ooh,
holding the scales.
Honk, honk.
White, on the other hand, had just said he'd quit if Vincent wasn't on his side. And in the Associated Press, White mentioned a conversation he'd had with Eddie Murray, who told him that Joe West was a good umpire with a bad attitude. Seems to be the common refrain on Joe West, that he knows how to do the job well and seems to just not do it well.
Eddie Murray seems like one of the nicest people in baseball. Like, to have someone, to have him be like, yeah, like, you know, I'm basically a Hall of Famer and like the person everyone loves in the game. You're just kind of like a bad person.
And I mean, honestly, if you have the ability to do your job well and just choose not to, that's worse than just being a bad umpire, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, look, like, if you want to do your job bad and, like, your job is, oh, yeah, I, like, run spreadsheets. Like, go for it. Like, do your job bad. I don't care. But, like, if your job is an umpire and then you also want to go ahead and say, like, and I'm the best there is, baby, like, I don't really like you now. Like, you're a bad person to me.
Well, somebody else wrote a column about the issue. Richie Ashburn in his Daily News column. He used this space, though, to just tell a story Don Zimmer had told him about having a similar experience.
Ooh, Don Zimmer is back.
Yeah, it's funny. You keep mentioning people who I'm going to get to later in the story. It's funny. Zimmer said he was coaching third base for the Cubs. Joe West was the third base umpire. Zimmer says, I had a runner headed for third, and he was going to be out by 10 feet. He would have been out, but the throw from the outfield hit him. Now, I'll admit I move around a lot as a third base coach, and sometimes I move in front of the umpire. I had umpires yell at me to get out of the way, but I always like to get in close to the bag. So I'm right on top of the bag when the next thing you know, West grabs me with both hands on the back of the shirt collar and throws me to the ground. I must have rolled over two or three times, which is funny because that's what happened. That's what Don Zimmer does on Instagram.
All right.
He says, I was furious. I asked West what the bleep he was doing, and he told him he was crazy. We had a hell of an argument, and I called him every name I could think of, but he didn't throw me out of the game. I think he realized his mistake. Now, who walks over from first base but crew chief Doug Harvey, and he wants to know what's going on. West tells him I was in his way, and that's why he threw me down, and Harvey says he would have done the same thing. Now, I'm really burned up, and Harvey winds up and throws me out of the game. So, again, umpires backing each other up for violent behavior. I mean, at this point, how do you not see this as a pattern? That Joe West is just – to any opportunity he has to put hands on someone, he takes it.
He's a tiny dictator, like all these people. They're just like – they're tin pot dictators. They're just like, yeah, worst kind of people.
So, finally, on September 5th, wire reports informed us that the situation had been resolved. Bill White was still the NL president. There was a brawl policy in place that didn't make Joe West feel bad about himself.
Oh, good.
All the owners apparently had thrown their support in with White, and Faye Vincent said he was happy the issue was resolved. But more importantly, in a statement Tuesday, Vincent said, quote, any further discussions that are appropriate or necessary to reflect judgment by President White on the conduct of umpire Joe West or any other umpire will be conducted privately.
Oh, dang it.
Undoubtedly, it was a red-ass summer, Trev. So I ask you.
You got back to the beginning. I thought I'd never find out why they were a secret fraternity, and yet.
I ask you, Trev, as the umpires of today are, and have been for some time, treated like, as we said, a coven of infallible demigods for whom we should be grateful to have appeared in our world, do you think this story is the cause of that dynamic?
Yes, 100%. I mean, look, like I can't imagine how it wouldn't be, right? Like this is the moment that they were threatened. Like it's the moment that their authority actually was like a problem for a moment where people were like, "Hey, maybe we shouldn't take this garbage from these people. Maybe we should talk about how much it sucks." And all of a sudden everyone's like, "Okay, wait, this is bad." It's like the movie Blazing Saddles. You're familiar with the movie Blazing Saddles?
Of course.
Okay. There's a scene in Blazing Saddles where Mel Brooks, as the governor, says, gentlemen, we got to protect our phony baloney jobs. this is exactly the moment where Joe West basically sits everyone down and says, like, if you don't protect me right now, all of our lives get harder and we don't get to do the dumb crap we're used to. And they put pressure on until the league was like, well, we can't give you everything, but we'll give you the part where it's like, fine, you get to like do whatever you want. We'll just be quiet about it. Like sort of do the silence thing. I don't know. Shut up.
Well, in any case, our epilogue has arrived. The following season in 1991, it was early in the schedule, April 16th, when Gene Collier of the Pittsburgh Press wrote a spicy column in which he told us ejections had been up 30% in 1990, making for a real red-ass summer. The column came on the heels of two ejections in a Red Astros games that were well-deserved, which meant, Collier wrote, that perhaps umpires would back off from tossing players for any of their, quote, increasingly esoteric criteria.
Did you intentionally do red ass and then red Astros?
No, I didn't.
Wow, that was really good. Very, very solid.
I have a few segments from this column that I actually really enjoyed. it was just full of, you know, newspaper columnist sarcasm, but directed at umpires. So I appreciated it very much. Collier wrote, when the umpires union agreed to a new contract at the last possible instant before the season began last week, not a lot of attention was paid to the particulars or the politics of the new deal. In its bid to decaffeinate a roster of umpires that has made irritability part of its honor code, baseball largely failed. Apparently, the umpires got their minimum pay raised to $60,000 a year. Their maximum pay got raised to $175,000 a year. They got a 33% increase in their share of the postseason cash windfall, and they picked up an extra week of vacation. And in the only union concession, agreed that postseason assignments should be based on merit rather than rotation.
And we all see how that worked out.
Collier went through and made several sarcastic comments about particular umpires. One was Joe West, in which he brought up the events that we just discussed from 1990. But he also said, this ensures another summer of Bruce No-Fuse Frumming, who is so tired of hearing that the umpires are too sensitive that if you write a column criticizing the umpires for being too sensitive, he'll call you up at home to demonstrate that the umpires aren't too sensitive. This happened to me. In any event, umpiring was at its all-time worst in 1990, Collier wrote. Can these guys do it again? Do they have what it takes? I know they do. What's worse? They know they do. You got a problem with that? So that year, 1991.
That's really good. What a great column.
Later in July, Joe West, you know, you probably, I assume you think he learned his lesson, retired from baseball and lived on a Montana ranch the rest of his life.
I've never heard of this Joe West fellow.
Breeding golden retrievers. No.
Joseph West. No.
The next season, according to the Associated Press, Joe West was at it again in late July.
Good.
One standout moment was when he ejected mild-mannered Andre Dawson of the Cubs from a game for arguing a called strike, a decision to which the crowd responded by throwing a bunch of trash on the field, and to which Dawson responded by throwing like 15 bats onto the field.
I love it.
He said what had set him off was Joe West's smirk. We all know what that looks like. He said he pointed out, with Joe West, it's an intimidation technique that West often uses. Dawson had just wanted an explanation for the call. West's cute little grin was him saying, I don't have to give you one. So Dawson was fined for the incident. You know, he threw equipment onto the field. He was fined $1,000. And to the delight of columnists nationwide, he paid it with a check on which he'd written in the notes section, donation for the blind.
That's really good.
I liked that a lot.
That's very good. I mean, that gets him into the hall on its own, right?
Oh, like, easy. I don't even care.
Even if he wasn't like a, I mean, he is, but like, even if he wasn't like a deserving, I mean, that's just like, he's in.
I don't even care if he played baseball again after that. I'd put him in the Hall of Fame first ballot.
Absolutely. Oh, that's good. Donation. Oh, my God. That's so good.
Yeah. But that is the story of the Phillies and the versus the umpires in 1990, which just went on forever through the headlines of every newspaper. And, you know, to this day, it's just so funny to look back at how aggressive Joe West specifically, but also I think probably umpires in general were, you know, in this era. And times have changed, and you're not going to see an umpire body slam somebody today. And if you do, I mean, there will be
that's the last time you're going to see that umpire.
You would think, because I was just sitting here thinking, like, you're going to see a stronger response from the league. But at the end of the day, Rob Manfred's a total coward. And the owners will just, you know, they'll not be involved as much as they're a non-factor.
Honestly, I think what would happen is if you had, it would depend on the player, but the only player who's going to get body slammed by
the player. Yeah.
Yeah. The only person that's going to get body slammed by an ump is going to be like, you know, like a Jazz Chisholm or something like that, right? Like someone who's fun.
Right.
Probably someone who's not white. Like, just like, it's going to be, it's going to be someone who is having fun in a way that is not like aligned with normative baseball fun.
Somebody who's having fun, but it's not going to be because of the fun that they get body slammed. It's because they get into a heated argument with an umpire, but they are also typically a guy who flips his bat or something.
So let's say Manny Machado, that happens.
Ooh.
If Manny Machado got body slammed by, I don't know, Joe West, I mean, the physics of it notwithstanding, which I don't think he could body slam Manny Machado at this point, but, you know, let's say he could. Manny Machado would instantly just sue Joe West into oblivion. I mean, like, Joe West is a wealthy man, make no mistake, but, like, most baseball players who they would want to body slam to show them, like, who's in charge are far wealthier. And, I mean, that's a difference even between now and 1990. So, like, I don't think it would matter what the league did. I think the person who body slammed someone would get, like, if not assault charges, would get sued, like, into the ground.
It would be the only thing we talked about in baseball for months.
Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Months.
If they did not get kicked out, even, like, you know, Newsmax would have to then say the cancel culture wasn't real. Like, if you can't get someone fired for body slamming one of your favorite athletes, cancel culture's fake. You can't. It's never been real ever before.
Yeah. Just read them that thing that the umpires put on Facebook after Manny Machado touched an umpire during an argument. Like,
yeah,
just read it back to them. Like, you gotta. I know, you know, pointing out a contradiction in someone's beliefs or statements
always
is meaningless. It's meaningless, but, you know,
always solves the problem. You could at least understand.
You could at least submit that to the hearing and have it read out loud and say, like, this is what umpires think, just so you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, I feel like they really can only do the sanctimonious thing anymore. And, like, on a certain level, they are very good at that. Like, that's why you can say, like, I'm going to buy an AR-15 and, like, mow down some commies. Like, go MAGA 2020. Like, now that's seen as, like, oh, well, you know what? That's just the spirit of debate. And what we're fighting for today is the spirit of debate. Or, like, Joe West being, like, throwing someone out because they're, like, doing too big a bat flip. The umpires could say, like, well, you know what? It's the integrity of the game. And yes, we may disagree, but what we love is this wonderful game of baseball. Like, they can just, it's the conservative turn and everything. But, like, Trump is, like, you get to do the thing where you calmly say, like, wow, it seems like people are so upset these days. And we just want to fight for some traditional values. And you know what? If that's not okay with you, then I don't know what to tell you.
Everyone I'm around is mad at me, and that is everyone else's problem.
Yeah, clearly. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Maybe you should look at yourselves a little bit. And umpires are great at that. Umpires are great at doing that. They love telling you to look at yourself.
Well, before we close up shop here, I had originally written a section about Dennis Cook, the pitcher who Joe West had body slammed, but it wound up not really playing, you know, Cook winds up not really playing a role in the story. It's just that he was body slammed.
Other than being body slammed,
yeah,
yes.
Like, other than that. But I did want to mention that part of the story includes some quotes from the Phillies brass themselves about the 1990 Phillies, which was really funny because they made some moves, one of which was the acquisition of Cook, who actually he'd been acquired in the trade that sent Steve Bedrosian to the Giants for and brought back Terry Mulholland to Charlie Hayes and Dennis Cook. But after this scramble of moves, team president Bill Giles couldn't have felt more positive about these 1990 Phils. He says, "I wouldn't pick us to win the pennant," to the Inquirer at a Phillies luncheon in the offseason. "The East was a little weaker," Giles explained, and, quote, "with a few breaks, we could be a contender. And GM Lee Thomas wouldn't even say the Phillies, after two straight years of finishing in last place, would hit 500. He says, quote, let's just say we'll be competitive."
Wow. Can you imagine how that would go these days?
I know. So, like, just to close the loop on the the fate of the 1990 Phillies.
Yeah, they didn't win.
I don't have their record in front of me, but I think we can rest assured they did not win at all, folks. They finished 77-85, fourth.
I kind of love that. Like, someone was pointing out, like, the Flyers had, like, I don't remember who it is, and I apologize, but the Flyers had some sort of, like, nonsense excuse for why they did bad. Like, they didn't make the playoffs this year, and the excuse from the brass was, well, it's just, like, really hard with all our Canadian players. They were, you know, our training schedules were all messed up because of COVID. And the person pointed out, they're like, say what you will about Howie, the Eagles GM, Howie Roseman, like, he's a pain, like, and there's a lot not to like about him. But anytime anyone asks him what went wrong with the Eagles, he gives, like, an account that is believable, not, we had to deal with the same thing everyone in the league had to deal with, and it was harder for us for some reason. And I kind of like that Lee Thomas and Bill Chiles are like, well, we're not very good. Like, I don't want to break down why that is. I mean, we could do that. But the thing is, they're just not a good team. So I don't see us competing. Like, there's something very charming about that.
Somewhere between 1990 and, you know, I guess probably like the 2000s, it feels like. Somebody invented the phrase, I think we're going to surprise some people.
Yeah.
And they started saying that instead of, you know, this. We're like, I wouldn't pick us to win the pennant, said the president, or said like, yeah, the team president of a baseball team.
It's like, it's funny that the Miracle Mets didn't like make that surprise us a thing, but also kind of great because like, for a long time, you had the Miracle Mets, and it was like, yeah, they're a miracle because no one saw it coming. Not going to happen to us. Like, don't get ahead of yourself, Junior. We're like, we suck. Maybe fourth place if you like that. Come to the park.
Yeah, come on down. Bring your family. We'll have Kite Man. You know, he'll fly in with a ball or something.
He'll upset you or something.
And then there'll be a baseball game that's even more upsetting. Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Dirty Inning. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher. And over on the Patreon, for $5, you get access to Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones. We have a Twitch channel as well. We do some live streams. We'll probably do another live stream this week before the Phillies games. We typically play out Sims and Out of the Park Baseball and let people in the chat determine how exactly we should let the game play out. That's always a lot of fun. And Liz and I do monthly movie reviews that show up on the Patreon, and John's been doing some video content that's a lot of fun as well. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on The Dirty Inning.
Goodbye.